Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, really excited to share this episode with you. This is an interview with Rebecca Fuller, who is our family law and estate planning provider attorney in Las Vegas, Nevada. And we just had Forrest Mosen on the podcast about two podcasts ago, and he was talking about, you know, the very basic fundamental core unbundled service options. And he described himself as kind of a horse and buggy approach to offering unbundled services in the sense that being an unbundled service provider can be quite simple. You can do one task at a time. It can be done in person. And you're coaching out 1 hour at a time, and that works great. And then we talked about, you know, the maybe more Tesla technologically enabled and implemented approach to offering unbundled legal services as well. And this is an example of that Tesla version. So, you know, one of the things we talk about in depth with Rebecca is she has implemented a lot of technology that allows her to streamline and kind of step out all her workflows using technology. So she has some practice management software that allows her to, you know, have the client enroll electronically with the click of a button, set up a matter in the practice management software, and have all the workflows and all their documents signed without having to print out a document, sign it, send it back, all done electronically. And all the workflows are automatically triggered and assigned accordingly to whoever in the firm needs to handle these tasks. And really just makes the whole practice and delivery of the service so much more efficient and accessible from any device anywhere. And Rebecca has a six-year-old daughter who is an aspiring actress. And so they make trips to Los Angeles quite often. And she's able to, you know, not skip a beat whenever she's making that drive from Vegas to Los Angeles or is working from LA without a problem, because she can access all her files, all her case files, make calls, take notes, access the court documents, because everything is electronically accessible through the cloud. So this is a really great example of, you know, how an attorney is implementing unbundled legal services, you know, doing it affordably, but also doing it efficiently in a way that enables her to kind of work her business around her lifestyle rather than her lifestyle around her practice. So let's get right into it. This interview with Rebecca Fuller, again, one of our provider attorneys out of Las Vegas, Nevada. All right, hey, Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, excited that we're having a chance to catch up. It's been, I think, a year, we were just saying, since you started working to us back around Thanksgiving. And from what I've heard, things have gone really well. So appreciate you taking the time to share, you know, how this past year has been for you and what's been working well.
Yeah, absolutely. Seemed like a good way to mark the 1 year anniversary, right?
Yeah, we can take a look at the saga that's been the last year of our partnership and working together and unpack what's been going so well, because I've heard things are going well. So maybe what you could do is just start by just giving a bit of background, how you got your start in the practice of law, the area that you serve and the practice area as well, and why you focus in on the family law and estate side.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of started my law career, honestly, on a whim. I had some friends in college who we all had a conversation one night, and the light bulb went off that I should be going to law school when I graduated. So I went to law school. I worked for a general practice firm while I was in school and had the best mentor I could have asked for, but had made the decision to move out to Las Vegas, which is where I am now, from Jacksonville, Florida. And so I came out here and, you know, kind of learned the ropes, took the bar exam, thankfully passed on the first try, and decided that working for other people wasn't for me after about 6 months of doing so. And so I went out on my own and opened my practice. That was back in 2006. So I'm 11 years out at this point. And, you know, initially I was very much the, you know, kind of take what comes in the door and, you know, get my feet wet and, you know, take whatever business there was so that I could get things up and running. And the more I sort of honed in on my sweet spot, so to speak, and, you know, the things that I enjoyed doing and, you know, the areas that I really wanted to focus on, the more I kept kind of coming back to family law and also the estate planning and probate side of things. So that's where I've kind of focused my practice over the last several years. And it's been fun. It keeps things interesting. It's probably the one practice area where things are always sort of new and different because you always have these unique family situations that you're dealing with. No case is ever the same. So it certainly keeps you on your toes, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you pretty quickly realized that, you know, working for someone else wasn't for you. Do you recall what aspects of that were the most challenging for you? And maybe if there's attorneys that have been working for someone else in the past, you know, for some time or have been considering going out on their own and starting their own practice, what are the qualities or things that might be coming up for them that came up for you that made you want to make the transition?
You know, I think what happened for me initially was that I was spending so many hours, you know, working for other firms and, you know, really just not having a life outside of my work. And, you know, to me, it was more important to sort of have work-life balance and, you know, have time for family and friends and, you know, really be able to dictate my own schedule. And frankly, you know, to take the kinds of cases that I wanted to take, not whatever was assigned to me or I had to take because I was an associate at the firm. So, you know, that was kind of my motivation behind it. And, you know, really just having that flexibility to be an entrepreneur and do the things that I wanted to do. And, you know, I think the thing that gets in the way for most people, honestly, is fear, you know, fear of failure, fear of not getting clients, fear of how am I going to pay the bills this month and that sort of thing. And thankfully, I was, you know, raised in a family where fear and failure weren't an option. You face the fear and you did it anyway. And so that was never kind of, you know, something that held me back or something that I let dictate what I did with my life or my career. So, you know, I think the single biggest piece of advice I can give people in that regard is to kind of feel the fear and do it anyway. Just jump into the fire and it'll work out, which may sound like crazy advice, but for me, it certainly has paid off.
Yeah. And you mentioned also something, you know, a key word that I think a lot of attorneys don't necessarily self-identify with, but is the word entrepreneur. You know, a lot of lawyers think of themselves as lawyers and as being self-employed and not necessarily as a business owner or entrepreneur. Can you share maybe what, why it is that you see yourself more as an entrepreneur? I mean, of course, you see yourself as an attorney as well, but when you think of yourself as a business owner and an entrepreneur as instead of just an attorney.
You know, I think for me, a lot of it has to do with sort of my personal background. You know, I come from a family of entrepreneurs, quite honestly. My father was an automotive technician and built race cars and things, and he always had his own businesses. And so I grew up with that. And I think that, you know, was a lot of my motivation for wanting to sort of do my own thing and, you know, have my own business, that I watched him and the flexibility that he had and, you know, the fact that he never missed a band concert or a school play or any of those things because he had the flexibility to do that as a business owner. And for me, you know, that was something that I always wanted. I didn't want to be stuck with someone else always dictating my schedule. And so, you know, I think for me, you know, I'm a business person first and a lawyer second in some ways. You know, if the business doesn't run, then as a lawyer, that's not helpful. You know, I mean, it's not like all of the legal knowledge in the world is going to help you succeed at your business. And frankly, one of the issues I think that a lot of attorneys run into is that business isn't something that's taught in law school. You know, you're taught the law and how to be a lawyer and, you know, how to manage your legal arguments and that sort of thing. No one ever sits you down and says, hey, let's have a practice management class. It's just not part of the curriculum. Probably should be. But, you know, for me, that was something that I spent a lot of time just sort of educating myself on the practice of law and, you know, the business side of things and the management of employees and, you know, creating the operating and trust accounts and all of those things that are the behind the scenes type of things that we don't really think about as lawyers. It's something we have to focus on as business people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is something that's missing in law school. And as we were in the most recently at a previous conference called the Better Access Through Unbundling Conferences, there's also very little training on unbundled legal services and mm-hmm. how lawyers can adapt their practice to changing market trends. And these are business owner types of mentalities and ways of thinking that, you know, a lot of times, you know, lawyers don't necessarily adapt in that way like a typical entrepreneur would. And so it's cool. It's very cool to see you think of yourself first as a business owner and then as a lawyer so that you can, you know, really take the approach of how do I make this business work? Where are the aspects that need to be in place to make it functional? What's the marketing? What's the sales? You know, how are we going to niche down? How are we going to differentiate ourselves from everyone else in the marketplace as well? So those are some... Was there anything actually when you were getting your practice going, any resources or things that you studied or books or things that you found were particularly useful or helpful in learning the business of law as opposed to the practice of law?
You know, actually, a couple of books that really helped me, and granted, they're probably much different now than when I read them, you know, 10 plus years ago, were How to Start and Build a Law Practice. And there was another book called Flying Solo. They were two that really helped me kind of put the infrastructure of my business in place so that, you know, I could focus on the law side of things and meeting with clients and, you know, really discussing their legal issues. You know, once you have those systems in place, as long as you, you know, sort of keep up with technology and really focus on ways to make your business as efficient as possible, it gives you more time to focus on the client aspect, which is, you know, ultimately what we're all here for.
Yeah. And as you were saying just before we started recording, as you talked about, you know, you've been doing maybe about half of the clients you're working with were working with unbundled legal services. Did you start out your practice, you know, or at what point in your practice, if it wasn't from the very beginning, did you start exploring, you know, delivering and offering unbundled services to your clients, at least in family law? And maybe you could share if you do that in estate planning as well.
Yeah, I started kind of offering some flat fee services and that sort of thing pretty early on in my practice. I would say almost right off the bat when I first opened my doors. And that was primarily for the estate planning side of things, you know, creating trust packages and, you know, that sort of thing. And I think it was kind of a natural thing because it just makes sense in those scenarios where, you know, maybe you already have templates and things that are established that you can use as your basis that you customize for each client instead of, you know, starting from scratch and needing to charge hourly on each one. The thing that's nice about offering those flat fees is that not only does the client know exactly what they're paying, but you know exactly what you have coming in. So, you know, that part is really nice to kind of get away from that billable hour structure. The family law clients were a bit different for me. Those all started out hourly for me. And it's only been in the last couple of years that I've really started switching to offering a lot more flat fees and, you know, kind of breaking things down for clients where they sort of pay as they go, so to speak, where, you know, they've got an initial fee for initiating the case and, you know, getting their preliminary documents done, and then an additional fee is due once we, you know, start filing motions or, you know, when we have trial coming up and that sort of thing. So it helps them plan. Helps the clients plan from a financial standpoint. And it helps me, like I said, know what I've got coming in each month so that, you know, I'm not necessarily chained to the billable hour.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe what we could do is, you know, just go back in time, maybe 1 year when we started working together, you're starting to take the leads, you know, take us through, you know, how the growth process has been for you, obviously, because we've been sending you a pretty high volume of cases. I think you're probably getting close to, you know, 20, you know, maybe, let's see, you know, 25 of a cycle. So close to 50 leads a month, or a little, maybe, you know, plus or minus 10 or so. So it's been quite a number of leads. Were there some things that you had to do to adjust to the higher volume of clients from when we started working together? And maybe you can just take us through some of the challenges or things that have worked really well for you that you've implemented to handle the increase in clients.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I've always kind of focused on in my business is just really making things as efficient as possible, which for me means having, you know, good practice management software that integrates with everything, you know, my bookkeeping, my email, all of my file syncing and all of that, so that I can literally work anywhere, anytime without worrying about, oh gosh, I left the file on my desk. So that's been one of the major changes that I've made. And it was something that I was moving to right about the time I originally signed up with Unbundled Attorney. So the two kind of happened simultaneously, which thank goodness they did, because I started getting all these leads and I probably would have been drowning in the volume had it not been for that. So, you know, I think that was kind of the main thing, was switching to new and better technology that would really make the practice more efficient. And about 6 or 7 months into working with you all and getting the leads and that sort of thing, I hired a legal assistant. I've had assistants and things in the past, and after I had my children, I kind of slowed down a little bit and scaled my practice back a bit to be home with them and spend more time with them. But as they're getting older, I really wanted to start ramping things up again. And once I signed up and started receiving leads, you know, of course, I became far busier than I had been. And so I had a need to, you know, bring on some help, which has been wonderful, taking a lot of the sort of administrative tasks of the day-to-day running of the practice off of my plate so that I can focus on the clients and the law.
Yeah. So a couple different topics there. Maybe before we go further on the hiring aspect and at what point to do that and so forth, just maybe you could briefly share the tools of technology that have been most helpful to you. I think you mentioned to me that you've been using Practice Panther, and if there's maybe you can talk a bit about that briefly, and then any other tools you found that have helped you become more efficient in the way that you're describing, that, you know, makes your processes more streamlined and allows you to work with more clients.
Yeah, absolutely. So Practice Panther is the practice management software that I switched to. And what I love about it is that it fully integrates everything. I've got all of my client contacts, every matter is in there. So each client, you know, we open a new matter, we may have more than one matter per client, and it keeps them all together so that you can access information. It syncs with Box.com so that I can access all of my files remotely all the time. The program itself is also in the cloud, which is great because I can log in when I'm sitting in court on my phone through an app, and, you know, I can track my time that way, or send an email to a client, or, you know, access various notes or time entries that we've put in. It also does, you know, track all the time and expenses. We do all of our billing, everything really, it's a very comprehensive program. So everything is really in one place, which is wonderful. There's also a separate login for my assistant so I can, you know, track what she's doing and make sure that, you know, tasks are accomplished. We can assign tasks to each other that need to be addressed for various clients or from an administrative standpoint. They also integrate with LawPay, which is great for credit card processing. So clients, literally, when we send out invoices, they receive an email with a link that they can click on and just pay it directly from the email. So that's really helped from a collection standpoint and really getting those receivables paid. I also use Outlook for email, which integrates as well. The one of the nice things that Practice Panther offers is each client has a synced folder with Outlook. And so you can move your emails and things into them, and they save automatically and sync automatically with the practice management software. So everything is just really fully integrated. It also integrates with QuickBooks, which I use for my bookkeeping from the administrative side of things. And that all syncs automatically as well, which is amazing. It's honestly, it's eliminated so much time that I spent, you know, making double entries or, you know, that sort of thing to make sure that everything was accounted for. So that's really my my primary technology tends to be those three things: Practice Panther, Outlook, and QuickBooks. Of course, I use, you know, word processing and that sort of thing as well. I also switched to using a different platform with LexisNexis for my legal research. I switched to their Lexis Advanced system, which I've found to be a lot more user-friendly and easy to find what I need quickly. So that's helped and made things more efficient from a research standpoint. The other thing that we do in general is just keeping all of our documents and things scanned so that everything is electronic all the time. I have physical files for a lot of cases, but I honestly don't need them or use them the majority of the time. These days, I pretty much pull up all of my files on my laptop or my iPad when I go into court. I work exclusively off of those when I'm in the office or if I'm working from home that day, which is great. I can also work in my car or, you know, anywhere I might be, which is just amazing to have that technology available and have everything at my fingertips all the time.
It's pretty amazing how quickly the practice of law has changed now that we have cloud-based practice management. And really, I think it's only been around for maybe 5 years since it was, you know, considered, you know, the original one started coming out that at least had this kind of cloud-based, all devices integrated type of aspect.
Right.
It really, you know, enables a lot more time, location, freedom, ability to work from anywhere, from at any time. We've had a number of lawyers come on the podcast that spend a lot of their time, the majority of their time working from home and then have some staff at the office and go back sometimes. But, you know, really enables a lot more flexibility in the work schedule and the capacity to also be doing things outside of the practice while still being, you know, efficiently able to get things done. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it really is. And for me, that piece of it has really been invaluable. Particularly in the last few months or so, kind of just on a personal note, my daughter, who will be 6 in another month or so, is an aspiring actress and has an agent and a manager in LA. And so we're back and forth between Las Vegas and Los Angeles all the time for auditions and things that she's doing. And the amazing thing is that on the trip, I'm working, I'm calling clients, I'm, you know, getting things done without ever missing a beat because I truly can literally work anywhere, anytime. And it's been absolutely invaluable to have that time with my family and also, you know, not miss a thing with my client.
That's awesome. I mean, it really is the kind of mobile lawyering generation.
Right.
And
right. It really is.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's really exciting to see and see the potential of that and the ways that it can express, like you're saying, like being able to be with your family and your daughter and go to LA or other people taking more expended time, you know, to be in other places like the beach or vacation or to be able to spend more time doing, you know, other things that they really enjoy to do. So they really the possibilities become pretty endless in that way. So one thing I wanted to unpack as well was you mentioned that you did hire an assistant, and this is one of the understandably, this is one of the main challenges, I think, for a lot of our attorneys. You know, they'll come on board day one with our service and then get 4 leads that day and 3 the next day. And it's like, whoa, this is like a lot of leads all at once. And especially nowadays, because, you know, we've made some adjustments and the lead volume's really been picking up. And so adjusting to that increase and hiring and trying to find a way to scale, we've talked about, you know, your efficiencies and technology. I think that's really, really key for sure to develop and also develop procedures and processes around that. And these types of technology and practice management tools have a lot of that built in so that anytime a new matter is created, you've got all the tasks you need to get done. You know, they can be easily assigned to whoever's going to be knocking them out. But maybe you could just briefly talk about at what point it was you decided, you know, I really need to, you know, get some help to continue to manage this and scale it up and how you went about, you know, hiring your legal assistant this time around, and if there's anything you're also considering doing to continue to scale.
Yeah. So for me, you know, the realization that I was going to need to hire someone happened pretty quickly because the volume was just there. Yeah. You know, but it being that I came on right around the holidays, there was a little bit of a lag initially just because, you know, people get busy with worrying about Christmas and Thanksgiving and travel and kids being out of school and that sort of thing. So really after the first of the year, this year was when things started to pick up quite a bit. So after about, I'd say 4 months or so of drowning in work because I was so much busier with having all these leads coming in, I literally said, I can't do this anymore. And thankfully, it had worked out that my former assistant, who I loved, and we parted ways for kind of other reasons, was leaving her job because we, you know, stayed in touch and so forth. And so it was kind of the perfect opportunity to bring her back, which eliminated also the need to kind of filter through potential job candidates and that sort of thing. So I was really lucky in that regard that I was able to just bring back a great assistant that I'd used in the past who already knew a lot of, you know, the ins and outs of my specific practice. And really, it was just a matter of kind of teaching her the new systems that have been put in place since she was here last.
Yeah. And so it seems like there's two different directions an attorney can go if that's dealing with, you know, a greater amount of workload than they can handle themselves. Number one, you can take, you know, you can hire a supportive role, which would be an assistant or a paralegal or someone to assist you with some of the workflows and workload so that you can, you know, handle more cases yourself. And then there's the option of, you know, having contract lawyers or hiring associates to take over certain cases entirely. And you've decided to go the route, for at least for now, of, you know, just getting support. Did you, at any point, did you consider hiring an associate or expanding your firm itself? Or did you always think of going the route of just getting support for now?
So initially my plan was to, you know, hire support staff and then to kind of take it from there. And I'm actually kind of getting to a point now, a year in, that I'm really looking at some different options for contract attorneys and so forth. I don't necessarily at this point want to bring on an associate and, you know, have someone full time to expand the firm that way. I have had associates in the past, and quite frankly, having employees is not the most fun thing on earth, to be honest. So, you know, my dad used to always tell me that the only thing worse than being an employee is having them. And so I kind of have always taken that to heart. But, you know, having an assistant's been great. And, you know, support staff, I think, is a little bit different than having, you know, an associate or that sort of thing on board. But I feel like contract attorneys, for me personally, are probably the easier, better way to go. And so what I'm going to be focusing on as I'm continuing to scale at this point is sort of outsourcing as much of the drafting of documents and things as I can, so that I'm the one available for the court appearances and that sort of thing. But the behind the scenes sort of, you know, busy paperwork, research, that sort of thing is taken care of for me.
Yeah. Can you make, that's probably a window into what I was going to ask you is, you know, what are some of the tasks and workflows that you've been able to offload to your legal assistant so that attorneys might, you know, so attorneys, if they're rolling solo and they're thinking a little bit about, you know, getting a little bit overwhelmed and considering how they can do it, what are some of the things that your legal assistant can do for you that will then free up your time and give you the capacity, that now frees up your time and gives you the capacity to work with more clients?
Yeah, so one of the things that has been great in particular is that I've transferred the duties to her of sort of all the follow-up. Because as the saying goes, the fortune's in the follow-up. When you know, meet with a client or have a consultation or even just a phone call with a potential client, you know, if you don't follow up with them, if they're not signing right on the spot, you might as well throw that money or time that you've spent in the garbage. So, you know, she has kind of a daily schedule where one of the first things that she does every day or, you know, at different times throughout the day is to call and follow up and, you know, see if various potential clients are ready to move forward, which has turned into certainly having a lot more return on investment, so to speak, and a lot more conversion of those potential clients. So that's been wonderful because it, you know, it can take significant time to do that. And it's something that, unfortunately, in the past, I haven't had as much time to be able to commit to. And it's something that's really important for just the growth of the business. So that's probably the number one thing that really has been important. But she also takes care of a lot of the kind of non-legally essential duties in terms of, you know, making sure that documents are electronically filed with our court clerk and, you know, following up on documents that are needed from clients and kind of the, you know, the day-to-day things like that. she, you know, of course, answers the phone calls and, you know, that sort of thing as well. And I have a lot of templates set up for my practice to kind of streamline things and save me time when I'm drafting documents. And so for, you know, various court documents and things, she'll be able to just pull up the template and fill in the information for me so that instead of me drafting it start to finish, I can just review it and make any edits or corrections, and then it's good to go. So those have been some huge time savers and really have helped streamline things a lot to make sure that, you know, we're not doubling our efforts. Instead, you know, we're really making things as efficient as they can be.
Is it possible to quantify in any way how beneficial it's been to have a legal assistant specifically focused on follow-up, in addition to a lot of other things of the day to day? But, you know, it's one of the first times this has been really been mentioned, and you're absolutely right. I think there is a really great fortune in follow-up, and it is the type of thing that tends to fall by the wayside for most firms, just because they're focused on new business, new clients, new leads, and not necessarily realizing the potential of just following up and staying in touch with clients, both the ones that you haven't quite reached and also the clients you've met with and didn't quite pull the trigger right away, just to stay top of mind.
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I have necessarily a dollar figure or, you know, conversion rate or anything that I can apply to that. But I can tell you that in this week alone, there have been 5 clients that she's followed up with that have then, you know, paid their initial fee or retainer because, you know, they now were ready. And, you know, a lot of the time what we get is, you know, someone saying, okay, you know, I've got to get money together, or, you know, I'm going to talk to my brother, sister, mother, whoever it may be, who's going to help me out. You know, that tends to happen a lot, I think, in family cases in particular. And so, you know, following up with them and, you know, reminding them, hey, we spoke a week ago or a month ago, whatever it's been, it does keep you top of mind. And a lot of the time it's, oh, yeah, you know, I expect that I'll have the initial fee for you in a couple of weeks, or, you know, whatever the case may be. One client who she had followed up with for me, my assistant followed up on, I literally have been speaking with this guy off and on for about 6 months, and he called and paid his retainer yesterday. So, you know, I mean, sometimes it does take a bit of time and follow up, and, you know, it's not something that she's putting excessive numbers of hours into. It's something that, you know, she'll maybe spend 20, 30 minutes a day just, you know, making some calls and following up. And a lot of the time it's just leaving a message, or, you know, maybe you get a voicemail that's full or whatever. But they see the number and they remember it, or, you know, they hear the message and think, oh yeah, I need to take care of that. And so I think just staying top of mind really does make a big difference.
Yeah. Follow-up's been a really, you know, a very recent topic on the podcast as well. We had Robert Buchanan come on the show and talk about how he's set up email autoresponders that he sends out broadcast emails, you know, periodically directly from him, but also just has a series of emails that have been written that last, you know, 6 to 12 months from the time that he meets with each client, as just another way in an automated fashion that he can stay top of mind, give people updates and say, hey, you know, here's some examples of, you know, things that people might be concerned about in family law. This is something that came up in a recent case, and this is how we, you know, this is my thinking on how we handle it. But there's so much, there's so many things to distract people from the things that they really need to get taken care of legally. And so many other options out there, it's really important to stay top of mind, like you said.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, one thing that we've run into in the past is that, you know, a potential client may decide that they want to consult with 2 or 3 attorneys before they decide who to utilize. And so what tends to happen is they forget which one they met with and, you know, what the name was or who the firm was or, you know, whatever the case may be. So when you're calling them and following up and those other 2 firms that they met with aren't, guess who they're going to go with?
That's right. Yep.
And it does. It makes all the difference in the world. And, you know, that's something that I've got some automated emails and things that go out to primarily for invoices that haven't been paid and that sort of thing. But that's another thing that, you know, just from a technology standpoint, it really does help, you know, just to stay at the forefront and have those reminders going out. Our our practice management system also has options where we're putting in appointments or hearings and that sort of thing on the calendar. And it has an option to send an email to the client, basically assigning the task to them and giving them all the information. And that's another one of those things that's just a time saver, but they're still getting the regular contact from the office, you know, without necessarily having to call them and say, hey, don't forget you have this hearing. It's an automatic email that comes out.
Yeah, it's a huge time saver and just one less thing that you guys have to keep in your on the conscious calendar to
right.
remind them about. Yeah. Okay, great. So I'd love to switch gears and just start to unpack a little bit about your workflow in the way that you guys are currently fielding your leads, especially now that you have an assistant and the technology behind you to, you know, deliver these services and so forth. So could you maybe just walk us through how you currently receive the leads, who calls the leads when you're available, if you reach out to them when you're available, or if your assistant always makes the initial call, and then just, you know, step us through the process from there as well. Because from what I've heard, your conversion rate, I don't know if you have an idea off the top of your mind of roughly what your conversion rate out of 10 is for the leads, but I've heard it's very strong.
You know, I should have probably looked at the numbers and figured that out for you, but I'd say it's probably around 70% that are converting into clients once we've, you know, had it contact with them. It may actually even be higher than that, quite honestly.
I heard that it was greater than 50%, so that's really, really excellent.
Yeah, and typically kind of my process is, for the most part, my assistant makes the first call. And, you know, a lot of the time a lead comes in and, I mean, we call generally, if at all possible, as soon as it comes in. You know, you're getting the text message notification and the email notification that there's a new lead. And so we always try to follow up, you know, as soon as possible. Now, granted, sometimes we get calls or leads that come in at 3 o'clock in the morning, and obviously we're not calling those ones when they come in. But, you know, that's kind of the nature of Las Vegas and, you know, my unique market that a lot of people do shift work and that sort of thing. So, you know, they look us up and, you know, get the information at all hours of the night. But for those ones, you know, they typically are the ones that we call as soon as we come in, you know, the next morning, or follow up later in the afternoon if we don't get them right away. And typically, you know, she'll make the calls and schedule phone consultations. It tends to be faster and easier to get people on the phone than to, you know, try to schedule an in-office meeting. And we find that most clients prefer that for the initial meeting. There, you know, some of the older ones for like estate planning, for example, tend to want to meet in person, which is totally fine. But they're also the ones who are usually ready to pull the trigger as soon as you meet. So it's kind of killing two birds with one stone. But yeah, typically she'll set that first appointment. We'll do a phone consultation. A lot of times we're retained right over the phone on that first call. Sometimes it will be scheduling an in-person meeting from that call, to sit down and, you know, go over kind of some more in-depth information about the case and get the initial retainer payment.
And right there, I want to just briefly stop you because I think it's a really good point, especially with your assistant making the calls. And, you know, we've had to explain this to a lot of newer attorneys coming on board is, you know, they'll initially start calling the leads themselves, doing the initial calls, and they're doing great, and they're enrolling clients left and right. And they'll say, well, you know, I've got all these clients now. I don't quite necessarily have the time to be calling these leads. So they'll just take a staffer or they'll hire, you know, any random person to you start calling the leads. And then just book them in to meet with me, and it'll work out great. And all of a sudden, they call in. Maybe they're calling in to cancel or and say, you know, this isn't working out. And we'll look into it and go, so what's been happening? Oh, well, you know, I've got my staffer calling, and he's just booking me in, but no one shows up, and so we're going to say, oh, okay. Well, there's this underlying problem, which you can't is the assistant. The most that you would ever usually want to have an assistant doing is just booking a phone consultation, but not booking straight into the office, unless, like you said, it's just someone that's they're very clear that that's what they want to do. But
right.
Just so they have an opportunity to talk to you. And so that's just a really key point that I think a lot of attorneys, when they're looking to scale and they're making that transition, it's kind of that mistake they made. They think that it's the same if their staffer just books them into the appointment as it is for, you know, themselves and the attorney to actually talk to the client and how important that
is. Right. And, you know, that's kind of what I've made the solid policy that in almost all cases, the first, conversation is a phone consultation. And, you know, it saves a lot of that, you know, people aren't showing up or whatever the case may be. Now, if they're adamant that they want to meet in the office, the thing that we've implemented as well is that we require them to provide us with a credit card to secure the spot. Uh-huh. And we don't charge them unless, you know, there are no call, no show without, you know, any advance notice. So that has virtually eliminated the no call, no show type of client. And, you know, frankly, it helps kind of weed out the tire kickers, so to speak, too. You know, the ones who are just kind of calling to get information and don't actually want representation and that sort of thing, because people don't want to give out their credit card number unless they're serious.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so key that you're just starting with that phone consultation, because like you said, a lot of times, well, I mean, specifically lead generation, it's really important for you to, you know, have an opportunity to build some trust and some rapport with the client, have them get to know who you are. Because a lot of these leads, you know, they're coming from our site. They don't necessarily, they haven't met you yet. So it's not right. The same as a referral in that sense. And it's really important that newer attorneys coming on board with lead generation understand that distinction, that it's different than a referral in that way. And second of all, like you said, a lot of the clients are open and willing to enrolling over the phone. Can you maybe talk a bit about that? And what percentage of the clients do you think just say, hey, you know, it's okay, we can just go ahead and get started now, and here's my card and let's get going?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's so unique about my market in particular is that we have a lot of people who either lived here for a short time or, you know, have moved away. It tends to be, a high turnover market. And so what ends up happening is they may have opened a case here and now they live in California or Utah or whatever the case may be. And so a lot of times they have no choice but to do a consultation by phone because they aren't going to drive in or fly in just to meet with an attorney. So for those ones, it's particularly easy and they pull the trigger of the phone regardless because, you know, they don't want to have to travel to meet in person. But also for a lot of the local clients who still do live here, I would say probably at least half of them, maybe more, are comfortable, you know, once they've spoken with me and, you know, we've kind of talked about the specifics of their case and what needs to be done and, you know, what direction they can go, what their options are, they're ready to move forward. And, you know, most of the time they do go ahead and just, you know, sign by electronic signature or, you know, through email back and forth. And I think a lot of people these days appreciate not having to take the time to, you know, drive across town to meet in the office or, to take time off work to do that, because a lot of times we can schedule them by phone, you know, right when they get off work, and they don't have to worry about, okay, I get off work at 4, your office closes at 5, am I going to have enough time to get there and meet with you? You know, most people at least can take a 15-minute break at work if they need to, and then they're not missing time out of their workday in order to meet with an attorney. So I think we've kind of moved to that culture these days where there isn't as much in-person interaction as there once was because of technology and, you know, the things that we have available. And, you know, a lot of people these days, they want to communicate by text. They don't even want to talk on the phone. So, you know, I think it makes it a lot easier to sort of sign people without ever having that in-person meeting. You know, I have at least probably, I'd say, a dozen or so clients right now that I've literally never met in person.
Right. That's not uncommon. I mean, unless you go to court, of course, then you meet them there. But
even then. I mean, I have a client who lives in Virginia and I've arranged it so that he can appear telephonically for his hearings. So we literally probably will never meet.
Yeah. And that probably also has somewhat to do with the types of options you're offering. You know, you've been providing some different unbundled legal services, and I'd love to unpack that. But, you know, either way, you're still converting a lot of these clients over the phone. And you mentioned about 15 minutes. We found it's kind of a trend that the attorneys that do more of the phone enrollments tend to spend a little longer on each call, whereas the attorneys that prefer to do things in person and enroll people in person will do kind of like a 5 to 10 minute touch base, got some details. Okay, we can help you with that. Why don't you come in? And that's kind of the way they do it, as opposed to taking the time on the initial consultation. So maybe you could just unpack, you know, do you spend a little bit more time on the phone consultation? And then also, how do you start to determine whether you're going to be taking a more of an unbundled approach or full representation? And, you know, that this is three things, but also maybe some of the types of options you offer. That's a lot, I know, but I'm trying to
Right. So usually the way that I schedule my phone consultations, I allow up to 30 minutes for each one in the scheduling. So if it takes that much time, I have it available. Most of them take about maybe 10 to 15 minutes. That tends to be about the average. And I think part of the benefit of doing them by phone is that the conversations tend to be much faster than in person. You're not, you know, having your small talk and that sort of thing that you might with an in-person meeting. So it really cuts down on, okay, let's get straight to the point. So, you know, initially, I always get just kind of a brief history from the client. I try to keep them on point, and, you know, I don't necessarily need their life story in order to assess what's going on. But I generally know in the first 5 minutes if it's something that either A, I can help them with. You know, sometimes we get calls from people who have a case that's out of state or something that's not in our jurisdiction. And B, if I want to help them. You know, sometimes I don't want a client because I can tell they're going to be difficult from that conversation. And thankfully, you know, being an entrepreneur and being my own boss, I can make that decision if I choose. So, you know, usually in the first 5 to 10 minutes, I have that question answered. And I generally have also heard some clues for them as to what they're looking for and what services are going to be best to offer them. That having been said, I always offer clients both options of having unbundled services or having full representation. And so typically, you know, I explain to them what the differences are. I explain to them that with unbundled services, we're, you know, very limited scope. We're only handling a specific issue or, you know, a specific court appearance, whatever the case may be. Whereas with the full representation, they have me start to finish. And, you know, we talk about payment options, you know, what is available in terms of, you know, methods of payment and that sort of thing. Most people, quite honestly, though, end up doing full scope of representation, you know, once they've kind of, with the litigation cases, I should clarify that, because estate planning and that sort of thing is pretty much always on an unbundled basis, and I do quite a bit of that as well. So I'd say it's probably a 50-50 mix, probably, of, you know, about half that do estate planning or just minimal services. And typically, the ones who do the unbundled services tend to already have an open case. You know, they've been through this before, and, you know, maybe they're looking for a child custody modification or something like that. And so they don't necessarily need a full scope of representation. You know, they might just need help with a court appearance, or, you know, they've already filed the paperwork on their own, whatever the case may be. So I kind of assess those things, you know, as we're chatting, and, you know, make notes and that sort of thing for my record. But I always offer both options to the client, unless, like I said, it's like an estate planning issue or something that, you know, would typically be done on a flat fee.
And when you have a client where it's clear that finances are limited enough where they can't just, you know, pay a your full retainer right up front, how do you make the delineation or decide the approach between, you know, taking a much lower retainer and then offering some form of a payment plan? Maybe you can talk about the types of options you offer there, and, you know, just doing some limited scope engagement to start with, having them handle one specific task, and then they can kind of retain you for more later on if they can get more resources, or, you know, once they've handled each thing, each, you know, the next step and so forth.
Usually for me, that depends on the complexity of their case. You know, if it's something that's relatively simple or straightforward, I pretty much always recommend to them, okay, you know, you may not have a lot of resources available. This is what we can do. And, you know, this is within what you've told me you can afford, so to speak. The other ones that kind of are more complex and that really are going to need someone in their corner from the get-go, what we require is that they do a retainer up front, and then we put them on an automatic either weekly, biweekly, or monthly payment. And that is done with a credit card through LawPay. It's set up as an automatic thing that I don't even have to think about. I just put in the information and the parameters, and it charges automatically at the designated interval. So that way, you know, we don't have to spend a lot of time chasing payments, and the client knows, okay, this is what I can expect each week, or, you know, every 2 weeks or every month.
I gotcha. Okay. And can you, would you, are you able to give an example? I mean, I'm not sure how particularly helpful it is because every market's a little different, but, you know, like average, like what is the range of what you'd be willing to accept as the initial and then monthly as a payment in working with folks? I mean, I think it depends, of course, you know, the time factors, if things need to be done quicker. So maybe you can just share, you know, like how you determine what you're willing and able to accept as initial and then as a monthly based upon certain factors.
For me, a lot of it, you know, it's very case specific. I don't necessarily have sort of a set amount. Typically, though, you know, I always have kind of a minimum based on, you know, what the complexity is that I have in mind. And so usually I won't accept less than between $1,500 or $2,500 as a down payment for those who are, you know, doing the ongoing payments, because I know that, you know, based on the amount of need that they have, it's going to go quickly. And I don't want to be in a position where, you know, I've got clients owing me thousands of dollars at the conclusion of their case. So most of the time, you know, those that are doing the full scope, they're depositing at least $1,500 to $2,500 down. And then they're typically paying somewhere between, I'd say, $300 and $1,000 a month, depending on, you know, what their financial situation looks like and also the complexity of the case going forward.
Okay, great. So, and so you're looking at complexity. You're looking, we didn't really mention time factors there, but usually you want to have some form of retainer up front, $1,500, $2,500. And so, I'm just curious, if they don't have the $1,500, is that where, even if they have a complex or, let's say, you know, contested case, is there a point where you still will offer like an unbundled service to someone to get them through the next step, or give them that limited assistance because it's better than them having no assistance at all? Like, how do you kind of determine whether it's, okay, I can't, or it's not going to work, or does that just never come up? I mean, I'm just curious because, you know, that's something we talked a lot about.
Well, I think for me, it doesn't come up a lot for me, only because I offer both options to every client. So I think, you know, they'll say, okay, I really want to have you handle everything for me, but I really can't afford it. You know, and we'll talk about whether they're able to meet the financial requirements of the initial retainer and then those ongoing payments. And if they're not, then we go back to, well, you know, you still have the option to do the unbundled services. This is what that would look like. And, you know, so I'm offering both services to almost every client. And so I think it eliminates having to have the conversation twice, so to speak, of, okay, full scope is what you really need, but unbundled is what you can afford. You know, they've already kind of heard the pros and cons of each.
Okay, great. And then maybe the last thing just on this thread here, and then we can, you know, begin to wrap up, is, you know, we talk a lot about the initial consultation, the types of options and so forth on the podcast. One thing we actually don't necessarily talk too much about is just that enrollment process and some of the initial workflows in, okay, they decide they want to move forward. Okay, from that point forward, there's an electronic retainer agreement, there's a payment agreement, and how does that work within the practice management? And then once that's completed, you know, what kind of tasks are fire? Can you unpack just a little bit about that next step? They say, okay, you know, I think we have an agreement of, you know, what's the best way to proceed. How does that enrollment process take place, especially over the phone? And then, you know, how the initial tasks start getting to work from there, especially given that you're utilizing a lot of this electronic, you know, practice management type of system.
Sure. So What we always kind of start with is I'll give all the details of what we're doing to my assistant. She'll prepare the fee agreement and any initial questionnaires that I need the client to fill out. We'll send those to them by email. They'll return the items along with payment if we haven't already gotten it over the phone. And then, you know, we set them up as a client and a matter within the practice management system. Practice Panther has workflows that you can apply to each matter, you know, based on your specific parameters. So we can apply the workflow and then assign the various tasks that need to be assigned from there. So let's say, for example, someone comes in with a divorce case that hasn't been initiated yet. So we know off the bat, you know, they need to do, we need to prepare a complaint and a summons and have the other party served and all those things. So we have all that in the workflow and assign out the tasks either to myself or my assistant. And, you know, we're sending task lists to the client of, you know, information that we need from them. And then my assistant will follow up on getting those items back from them. So if we haven't gotten the fee agreement and initial questionnaire and the initial payment back within a day or two, you know, she's right back on the phone or following up by text or email saying, hey, wanted to make sure you got it. Did you have any questions? And when can we expect it? So I think, you know, that's kind of the initial process. And once they've sort of paid and, you know, sent in the initial paperwork that we need, then we can focus on assigning out what needs to be done, keeping the client in the loop with, you know, things that are coming up, especially if, you know, the other party's filing a motion or something of that nature. And, you know, really just keeping it pretty automated for the most part with the way the software works.
Yeah, I mean, the electronic enrollments where you can send an email and it's just a payment link where people can just click, put in their card number, and it's just done electronically right from their mobile device or from their laptop. I mean, it doesn't matter. There isn't a need for them to, you know, print it out, sign it, send it back. I mean, that really has kind of gone the way of the dodo in most practices nowadays. So that really streamlines the enrollment. And then also, you mentioned all these workflows where you can, in each different type of scenario, all these workflows fire and then tasks can be created. But in any different case, like, there's a very specific number of things that can happen that need to happen, and they're itemized. And every single time a new matter is created, it creates those workflows so that everyone knows what needs to be done and in what time frame. And I just can't imagine how helpful that must be to be able to keep track of where each person is at in the process. And like you said, automating and streamlining to make sure everything's done on time and by the appropriate people.
It really is invaluable. You can't even put a price on, you know, how much time it saves and how much easier it makes it.
Yeah, it's really, really key. Okay, and so with that, I think we can begin to wrap up. I think the last thing I might ask is, you know, you've been doing this for, working with us for about a year and, you know, adjusted accordingly, hired an assistant, and implemented new technology. Is there anything else just in your strategy or your approach or your working with clients or the options you've been offering or anything else that sticks out to you that you've implemented that also has just really helped either with communication or any of those different aspects that you feel has been really beneficial to achieving the results you've been able to accomplish since we started?
You know, I think the biggest thing is just kind of getting into a routine of, okay, as soon as the leads come in, we're calling them, we're scheduling them. Sometimes I'm taking the call right then and there if, you know, I happen to be available, if I'm not either in other consults or in court or something. And really just, you know, following up as quickly as possible, because with a lot of these family cases and things in particular, if you don't follow up immediately, they're right on to the next person. So, you know, they feel like it's an emergency, they need help now. And that tends to be the case more so with family law than any other practice area, in my opinion. So I think that is really the number one thing that has made a huge difference is just that immediate follow-up. If we don't get them by phone, we're also automatically sending them an email and a text message. I do both because sometimes one method or the other is easier for someone to respond to. They also might not check their email as often as we do as attorneys. So that text message will get to them right away. And so I think those things, you know, have really made the biggest difference. It's just made it much easier. And frankly, having that availability for, you know, the texting and that sort of thing, because the phone system I use a company called Ring Central. And they have an app where you can text directly from your business number. So I'm not giving out my, you know, personal cell phone number to clients, or they'll be calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning. So it's great to be able to, you know, text them from my business number and have that communication and, you know, give them yet another option to utilize the technology and be in touch and so forth. And, you know, really offer as many options as possible. And it, I think in a lot of cases, it makes it faster and easier for the client to follow up too, or the potential client, I should say, because, you know, maybe they're at work and they can't take a phone call, but they can respond to a text message. So, you know, I think that's been really helpful as well.
Yeah, it's so important. And, you know, we, especially when we enroll new attorneys, we can't speak highly enough about the importance of, number one, calling in real time. And also using text message, so many clients will just respond, "Hey, I'm at work. Let's call back," and you can just set up a time right there through text while they're working. And they don't, because a lot of people just can't take the call. And really, your ideal customer can't take the call, because if they can take a call at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, from probably means they're sitting on the couch and they may not be working. So, the type of person that you want to get a hold of and get in touch with may not be able to answer that call the first time. And so, being able to be texting, and like you said, Ring Central is a good service for that. Google Voice is also a free service that any lawyer can set up with an area code or with their office line, and send a text message from something that's instead of their cell phone, so they have that barrier of access as you talked about, so they're not getting text messages to their cell phone in the middle of the night and so forth. And that's just an app on the phone as well. So, you know, these are really the fundamentals. These are the fundamentals of lead generation. It's so easy to get off them to be responding to people, but you know they are serious. These leads, you know, obviously we're, you know, doing what we need to do to get people that are, you know, serious about hiring an attorney. And so it's of critical importance that you're able to respond to people in real time. And I'm really glad that you shared that, because, and also happy that you found that that's made the difference for you too.
Yeah, it really has. You know, I mean, like I said, especially with the family matters, I think that if they don't get a response right away, they really will just move on to the next person, because they feel like it's an emergent situation. And oftentimes it is, when, you know, kids and custody and that sort of thing are involved.
Absolutely. Okay, so we will go ahead and wrap up. I know you've already got 5 leads in the box from today, and you've been at court all day, so I'm sure you need to get back to calling those leads that came
Absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
But with that, I mean, I really want to thank you, Rebecca, for, you know, coming on the show and sharing, you know, so openly what's worked well for you, the technology. I mean, you know, Forrest Mostyn was just on the podcast, and he described himself as kind of the horse and buggy of, you know, Unbundled Services, does everything belly to belly, very traditional in the way he does it, and it works great. And then there's also we'll call it the Tesla version of Unbundled Services, where you've got streamlined electronic enrollments, practice management software, and you know, it really impacts your ability to be very efficient, serve a lot more clients, and streamline the process. So thank you for sharing how these systems have impacted your practice, and really
My
looking
pleasure.
Forward to seeing how this continues to unfold over the years to come.
Great. Thank you.
And so with that, for everyone else that's listening, thank you for chiming in and tuning in every couple of weeks to listen to these podcasts, improve your practice, implement these systems. It is in a certainly exciting time with the internet and all these new technologies that are enabling you to, you know, continue to maintain and expand your lifestyle and your location independence and work mobily and serve a lot more clients by working with people in these affordable ways as well. It's certainly a new generation, and we appreciate you being part of it. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you all on the next episode. For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.